Hello and welcome to All Indians Matter. I am Ashraf Engineer. A few months ago, the government released the India State of Forest Report, claiming an increase of 2,261 square kilometers in the country's total forest and tree cover. This figure was immediately contested by experts. They say it's a result of the government changing its definition of a forest. Now, tea estates, coconut plantations, and even tree-lined avenues are being classified as forests. Starting in 2001, the State of Forest Reports changed the definition to include lands of at least 1 hectare area and with 10% or more tree cover, regardless of the tree species or the purpose for which they were grown or their ownership. So even mango orchards and homestead gardens of suburban housing developments in congested cities are classified as forests.
All Indians Matter.
We have on the show Stalin D, an environmentalist affiliated with the Mumbai-based NGO Vanashakti. His passion for environmental protection and conservation has resulted in many successes, including keeping wildlife corridors in the Western Ghats from falling prey to mining, securing protection for wetlands in Maharashtra, protecting mangroves in the Thane Creek and in Sivri, saving more than 3,000 trees from getting cut for a road widening project in Wada, campaigning to protect 3,000 acres of open spaces and forest land in RA Colony in Mumbai from being taken over by developers. And he was instrumental in getting Mumbai its second wildlife sanctuary, the Thane Creek Flamingo Sanctuary. Stalin has filed more than 25 public interest litigations to save our environment, forests, rivers, and wetlands. Welcome to the show, Stalin.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you so much.
Stalin, the change in definition makes one wonder whether forest cover has in fact reduced. Could you clear that up for our listeners?
See, if you look at the last 3 decades, we have been struggling to get the optimum figure of 33% forest cover. We've always hovered around 22-24%. Now, what has actually happened is that even that 24% is being eaten away. So now the government has found a new way to mask this loss. They have taken up things which are not supposed to be included in a forest survey. So they have taken up all, like you had mentioned in the beginning, the grassland, sugarcane fields, their avenue trees, everything. They have pushed it into it and made it appear like there is a lot of tree cover. If you look at the grandiose announcements made by the earlier government in the state, they said they had planted 33 crore saplings. Now, for God's sake, that's a ridiculous number to even throw out at people. Now, I'll promise you that I will quit this space if they can show me 2 lakh saplings. Okay, it's absolute mockery of the law. 33% forest cover is a long way away. We are losing forest by the minute. If you pick up the newspaper every day, you will find that some at least about 100 acres or 100 hectares of forest in the country is being given away for some project or the other. Now, what they are actually doing is just trying to throw dust in people's eyes and make them believe that there is a lot of trees, and people also have to be blamed because they equate trees and forests. Now, that's a different topic altogether which we should be talking about. But it's a sham.
Why would any government make such an absurd change in definition?
If you look at the Constitution of India and the Environment Protection Act, the Wildlife Protection Act, these are very strong laws. They don't give the liberty to the government to go and destroy what they want to. They have to demonstrate visibly that they are working within the parameters of the law. And the best way to do this is to confuse the people, the conservationists, and the judiciary also. Because whenever a matter reaches the courts or the case is being heard, the first thing that is said is that, sir, only 2,000 trees are being cut, but we are planting 5,000. Now, what is not told to the court is that 2,000 trees spread across, say, maybe 10 hectares is being removed, and in 1 hectare, you are planting 4,000 trees. So that kind of absurd confusions are being created, and the governments benefit from it. Because, see, there is no money to be made. Politics, now, if you look at politics, at least in our country, it is the art of making money by plundering nature. Unless you destroy nature, you cannot make money. And unless you make money, you can't remain relevant in politics. So it's a cycle. People are to be blamed for that.
So scientifically speaking, Stalin, how are plantations and other now things included like tree-lined avenues, etc., different from forests? I mean, I just want to bring out to the listeners why it's so absurd to club the two together.
See, plantations, I would call it as industrial agriculture. That is what. You're growing trees which have value for your commercial users. The ecosystem services are not part of the equation. When you talk of a forest, you're talking of a model of abiotic and biotic factors, flora, fauna, interacting with the non-living things, living and non-living things together, combined together to create an ecosystem which sustains life in the absence of human intervention. Now, a plantation cannot survive without human intervention, but a forest will survive irrespective of whether humans go into it or no. It is very simply said, I would say, a classroom is not a complete college. A classroom may demonstrate part of the education process, but it is definitely not a college or a university. So when you talk of a forest, you're talking of a university. When you talk of a plantation, you're talking of a classroom. So there is a fundamental difference in what we are talking about. And forests cannot be equated with trees, because if you look at forests, there are so many types of forests. You have coastal forests, you have shrub forests, you have grasslands, you have marine forests. So how will you equate it with trees? There are no trees. In shrub forests, you'll see they're all shrub, just get rid of it. In fact, there was an attempt to do that also till people realized, hey, you and grand, it had to be scuttled. So the fact is that trees are not forests. It's a combination of a lot of things. And what tells you it's a forest? It is the ecological indicators which are present in it. It is the birds that you find there, the kind of mammals that you will see there, the herbivores, the carnivores, everything together. I mean, you will find life which is there. It is not just trees. If you find, look at trees, you look at eucalyptus trees, you look at acacia trees, you will not find birds sitting there or even nesting there. That's because they simply know it's not right here. This is not the thing that belongs here. So every forest is different from the other, and trees are not the only factor. They may be a factor, but it's not the deciding factor whether that particular area is a forest or not.
Absolutely. What you're saying is it's not just trees, it's actually an ecosystem, right? And what does the change in definition imply for forest conservation?
It's the change in definition only suits the government and its capitalist or industrialist lobby. It is very damaging for conservation because it puts the conservationists and the environmentalists on the back foot, trying to prove the scientific facts. Facts which don't actually need it. For the enlightened or the person who knows it, those who are well-read in the field of environment, they don't need any explanations. But what the government is trying to do is to weaken the conservationist base that they cannot argue. They're talking of forests. Oh, we've got so many trees. That is equal to so many forests. Now, if you talk that to a scientist or an ecologist, he will chase you out of the door and say, go get your basics right. But that's the way things are. This is just nothing to an entire... it's a circus which is going on.
Do you think the change is a way to ease the handing over of actual forests for industrial development? And you've actually alluded to it already, while claiming that the cover is increasing.
Exactly. I told you, I'll give you an example. Let's say that the state of Goa, a couple of years back, declared coconut trees as grass. That it's a grass.
Really?
Now, we challenge that. Yes, they did that. We went to Goa, we challenged it in the Goa bench of the Bombay High Court. And we had to withdraw that kind of notification which they came up. The real reason was there are a lot of lands in Goa which are sought after by the liquor lobby for setting up breweries. Now, all these coastal lands are full of coconut palms. So they are saying the best thing to do is we are cutting grass, we are not cutting trees. So they tried to do something as absurd as that to suggest that the coconut tree was a grass and not a tree. So if you look at everywhere, it's the same thing. They try to downplay the ecological value or the true significance or the worth of the tree just to allow industries to plunder those lands. And lands, forest lands are treated like it's like a freebie to be distributed to all and sundry. They will not buy the kind of land. They are talking of, there is no mechanism in place. First of all, there is not enough land for afforestation. There are no checks and balances. See, there's only the balance of convenience is always in favor of the person who is destroying it. So they're trying to remove any possible hurdle for someone who wants to destroy the forest. And you won't believe it, mercifully, even the Honorable Supreme Court has sort of sensitized itself. At least when certain judges are sensitive, they blocked a railway line which was coming through a forest, through a sanctuary. They said there is no need for that railway line. People had to fight tooth and nail and they got it cancelled.
You're referring to the Goa agitation, if I'm
yes, the Molem Railway.
The one against the transport of coal.
Yes, there's no transport there. You mentioned in the beginning about 3,000 trees which were saved. It was a tough battle for us to prove that what that project was completely unnecessary. And it was only aimed at allowing the timber mafia and the contractors to make money. What happens is people have become more aware and they have started challenging these kind of absurd projects and their destruction. So the best, when you go to court, the courts are bound by the law. The role of a judge is to implement, see that the law is respected and activities take place within the framework of the law. Now, what these people are doing, the government is doing, they're shifting the goalposts, they're changing the laws. So once you say there is a violation, they change the law and say, now it's no longer a violation. Okay, killing someone is a crime. Tomorrow you say, no, it's not a crime, so you can't be tried for murder. So it's as absurd as that, the way it's going. But all said and done, it goes against the principles of our constitution, which clearly say that it's a duty of every citizen of this country to protect and care for wildlife and for animals, for the forest, for the rivers. And the state is only a custodian. It casts a responsibility on the citizen and as well as on the government. So mercifully, that provision still stands. Till the day they come and say, now the constitution has told you, just sit back and watch the fun. So we hope that doesn't happen on this.
You know, we know that forest cover has in fact been shrinking in regions like the Northeast, for example. Now, you worked a lot on the ground. Could you tell us some observations from the field?
See, India has two important biospheres. I would say hotspots. When you talk of hotspots, these are areas which are under severe threat. One is the Northeast and second is the Western Ghats. Both these areas are under severe pressure from the mining lobby, from the sand mafia, from the loggers, from the timber industry, from the infrastructure lobby. Everyone wants a share of the pie. And Northeast and Western Ghats are home to perennial rivers. See, India's strength comes from its 400 rivers. We have 400 perennial rivers. And that rivers originate in the forest. Without forest, there are no rivers. As simple as that. So when you destroy the forests of the Western Ghats or of the Northeast, you are plunging the entire nation into a water crisis. It will not happen overnight. In a decade, it will surely happen. So these are the spots. Like Northeast also, when you look from far, it looks like a very nice thick forest, but you venture into it, just a kilometer into the forest, you'll find that it has been completely deforested. The same goes for the Western Ghats. It's plundered and ruined by mining, basically, open caste mining. Take up Google Earth, look up the satellite map of Goa, look on the northern side, the entire thing has been scraped away. It's really heartbreaking to see the way things are going in the Western Ghats. So these are biospheres which need to be protected.
Just for some perspective for our listeners, what role do natural forests play in maintaining the environmental equilibrium?
Okay. Now, when you talk of forests, the difference between the forestry and the plantation is that plantations suck water. Forests provide water. It's a relation between the rivers and the forest. In the rainy season, the river gives the water to the forest, which again keeps giving it back to the rivers throughout the year in the dry months. It provides habitat. Flora and fauna depend on it for their survival. It gives you fresh air. It helps maintain climate, what you call resilience. The temperatures are down. In the age of global warming, you need lower temperatures. You need fresh air. Okay, the pollution has to be tackled. So having forests is a plus for everyone, including the birds, animals, humans, the rivers. Rivers also have been given the status of living entities now by the court. The Madras High Court recently passed an order saying that don't treat the river like something which is not alive. It's alive and it speaks to you. You have to understand that. It's like a mother. So thing is that we have to respect the forest. From a very selfish point of view, as a human, you still need forest if you want water. Desalination is not possible for the whole country. We may have a long coastline. Our logistical challenges do not allow us to take water to those quantities of water to all of the countries. You are only going to create more climate change refugees. People leaving their villages, coming to the cities to work, the farmlands getting abandoned, the temperate landscapes turning barren. So forests today, the standing forests of today, are your last shields against destruction. For God's sake, value it and protect it.
They also play a very important role in the livelihoods of forest dwellers, right? There are some tribals and human beings who live naturally in forests.
Yeah, but now the thing is that when you talk of livelihood, those people who live in the forest, they are the marginalized communities. They are living a hand-to-mouth existence. It's not the case that they are profiting from it. But we have still yet to evolve a model that helps them to make money while keeping the forest intact. Either a case where the community forest has completely overrun a particular wildlife area, or it's a case where the genuine tribals have been chased out. So even we are not able to have a balance between both of it. But yes, there are a lot of forest communities whose needs are limited. They are happy with what they have. The forest provides for them. We may talk about gas cylinders for everyone, subsidies and all that. But no, it's not true. Forests are dead wood from the forest is still used for cooking purposes. The forest lands are used for grazing by the tribals. The honey gatherers still use those. From dead wood, many artisans survive on that. So forests have livelihood benefits for the people who live around it. So we need to maintain a balance between the forest and also the tribals who live there.
Let's talk a little bit about mapping. We know that forest loss has led to natural disasters, crop losses, human-animal conflict, etc. Why is mapping such landscape transformation vital for conservation?
Landscape mapping you need to do to it's a periodic blood test or a periodic physical health checkup which you do. It has to be done. You have the data to understand where you're headed to, whether you're better off or worse off than the earlier years. The methodology, of course, leaves a lot to be desired. There is a big gap in that. I really am not a big fan of the way it is being done right now. Right now, we are heavily dependent on satellite imagery for estimating the density of a forest. Now, a mother tree keeps expanding its canopy with every year. So what you really don't know how many smaller trees have survived. So when you look at a forest, you need to look at the saplings, the subadult trees, the young trees, all those things. Those things are not done. Only on the basis of canopy, you are estimating how many trees are there. That method itself is flawed. But having said that, it is still important that we do it. At least we have some starting point to start for the conservation of forests.
Have you and the larger conservation community reached out to the government about this flawed manner of measuring forest cover?
Definitely. When the forest survey, they had asked for, they wanted to change the Indian Forest Act and they had asked for suggestions. And that's when we wrote to them how it is wrong and how the Forest Survey of India report also should be taken with a pinch of salt and how the methodology was for. Everything is communicated to them, not just by our organization. I believe a lot of good people who understand these issues have communicated. But the communication, sadly, is always one-sided. They don't talk to people who are critical of the government. See, the best way for anyone to function is to talk to your critics so that you know where you are, not get surrounded by yes men and say, okay, I'm doing a great job here. There are 10 people who are my friends who are telling me the same thing. No, you got to listen to those who criticize you also and ponder. The government has no desire to engage with people who are critical of them. So they want to behave in a manner which really doesn't do justice to the cause.
What changes would you recommend in the way forest cover is calculated in India?
If you ask me, I would say, first of all, you need to define, if you're going for the tree cover, then you should, the health of a forest should be measured by the amount of young trees which are there, along with the mother trees and the subadult trees. What is happening is forest fires are responsible for destruction of almost 60% of the forest today. So when the forest fires rage, all these saplings and younger trees die. So you don't know. And the mother trees have a certain age. The trees also have a certain age. And then what happens is that when new forests don't generate, then that's a serious cause of concern. So you go into a forest, you can create a grid. It's called grid mapping. You create a grid of, say, 1 kilometer, and you make 1 kilometer by 1 kilometer, and then measure those trees in it. And then go by satellite imagery and then make a calculation how much it is. But in that 1 kilometer, you will have to do that random sampling at all points in the forest, or maybe even 500 meters inside the forest randomly. So you know really what is the health of that forest. It's not only about the trees and what state they are in. For example, you may have a forest which has more than, say, 10,000 big trees. But that is not an assurance, because those trees need to be supported by the younger ones who will take their place. As when you don't see the younger ones, then you should realize that you are in trouble. It's not really good for us.
Tell us about Vanashakti and the work it does.
Well, Vanashakti, I would say that we address conservation in its true meaning. We engage in a lot of activities. We have educational programs with schools, with CSR groups, with colleges, with communities. So we have a lot of awareness and educational programs for them. We provide sustainable alternate livelihoods for people who are dependent on forests so that they don't have to go into the forest and cut those trees. We also do a lot of ground restoration work, like restoring degraded areas, mangroves, forests where the land has got degraded. We have the technical expertise and we have done it successfully in many places. We also take care of rivers. Rivers are very close to our heart. We are tackling river pollution on a very big scale. In fact, we have a landmark judgment from the Honorable Supreme Court of India. After an 8-year battle, we managed to get the government to pay 100 crores as penalty for polluting the rivers. It has never happened in the history of this country. 100 crores the government paid as saying, sorry that we are polluting the rivers. We need to correct our acts. So the rivers and then wildlife corridors have to be protected. The Western Ghats, we are fighting for those also. We have a section which is devoted to litigation also. But we do a lot of community work also. But unfortunately, the community work and the educational programs are not reported as widely in the media as they should be. We also create biodiversity, smaller, model biodiversity areas like butterfly gardens and stuff like that. So we are doing a lot of work. We are a small team, but we are scattered. And we try and do things to the best of our abilities. And we, of course, are in the forefront for policy issues. We will take it up. If it's wrong, we will petition, we will challenge it, and we will get it corrected. For example, just last year, the government came out with a letter saying that, okay, you go ahead with the constructions in the coastal zones, we will handle it later on. Without permissions, you can go on. We said it's absurd. It's completely absurd. We got it stayed. The court has stopped that order from getting operational. So we are on hands-on on conservation in all parts. It depends on who calls us for what. But we are there, but we are here to help people, help communities. Coastal communities work very closely with us. We understand their issues. We try to help them in every way possible. Even the sea level rise impacting coastal villages, we've addressed those issues also. It's a very big canvas. We can have a special show for Vanashakti if needed, maybe sometime later.
With that, there's a question I ask all my guests at the end of the show. Why do you do this work?
I do it for myself and I do it to make sense of my life. And I wish everyone else thought the same way. What are you here for? Were you sent here for making money and indulging in material pursuits and enjoying your life? Of course, that's necessary. But there has to be a purpose for your life. And I find it as a purpose in my life that I want to protect. I want to keep something for the children of tomorrow and for myself also. Nature belongs to everyone. And it's a gift from God. You don't have to go hunting for God everywhere. He's right around you all the while. You need to look around you and find it, and you'll find peace in yourself in that way.
Stalin, thanks so much for this. Forests are key to our progress and, in fact, our long-term survival. How we approach conservation will be the key to preserving them. So thanks for this conversation, Stalin.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you all for listening. Please visit allindiansmatter.in, that's allindiansmatter.in, for more columns and audio podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Ashraf Engineer, that's ashrafenginer, and All Indians Count, that's allindianscount. Search for the All Indians Matter page on Facebook. On Instagram, the handle is All Indians Matter. Email me at editor@allindiansmatter.in. Catch you again soon.